make his instruments of war and instruments of his chariots. You know, right now in their history, they've not really had a lot of this because it was the time of the judges. You would have a judge that would come along, and I'll tell you about one here in just a little bit. But you'd have a judge come along. The people would be under great persecution. God would raise this judge up. There would be a great victory, and the people of God would be happy, and the judge would die, and then they would fall right back into their same sin of complaining, griping, rebelling, and then God would let them go back into some type of captivity. And so what does he say about the daughters? Look at verse 13. He will take your daughters to be confectionaries. You say, does that mean they're going to make cookies? What it means is, it means they're going to be making perfumes for him. It's a perfumer. But now they're also going to be cooks and to be bakers. So that's where the cookies come in. And so you've got these daughters that they're just going to be taken from your house. They're not going to be able to help you anymore. Why? Because they're going to be serving the king that you want. He will take your fields, and he's going to take your vineyards. He's going to take your olive yards. And not only is he going to take them, he's going to take the best of them. You know, the ones that produce most, that's the ones he's getting. Not only that, he's going to take them and he's going to give them to his servants. The people that are in his palace, they're going to get your best. Well, he's going to take a tenth of your seed. He's going to take your vineyards. And what is he going to do? He's going to give it to his officers and to his servants. You're no longer going to be able to have your own stuff because he's going to confiscate it. And he will take your men servants. In other words, the best servants that you've got, the best employees that you've got, he's going to say, no, I've got to have them in Jerusalem. And he's going to take the best maid servants that you've got and your goodliest or choicest young men and your asses and put them to his work. It's not going to be any longer those employees working in your fields. The part of the fields that you get to keep, you're going to have to work them yourself because he's taken the best workers you've got. He will take a tenth of your sheep, and you shall be his servants. And what's significant about that word servant there, in the Hebrew, it really means you're going to be his slaves. That's what it means. And in verse 18, this is going to be the response. And you shall cry out in that day because of your king, which you shall have chosen you, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. I want to give you three things. Number one, it is easy for us to misplace our trust. Look at verse 20. That we may also be like all the nations. Now think about that a moment. Their trust is, if they are like other nations, that our king may judge us. Now who did they have as a judge right now? They had Samuel. He was the prophet of God, and he had been established from the time that he was just a young man. Do you remember a few chapters ago when he began to grow from being just a child there at the tabernacle? And it says that there was known throughout all of Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, that there was a prophet that was established. And what did he do? He had a circuit that he would go from one place to another place to another place, and he would begin to judge. And so what we have is we've got Samuel who was judging, but now they want a king to judge them. And it says in verse 20, Why do they want it? To go out before us and to fight our battles. Now I want you to think about something for a moment. One chapter before, we preached on it a couple of times ago. What did God do? God thundered out of heaven, discomfited the Philistines. They dropped their weapons and began to run. Israel picked the weapons up, chased them, and had a great, great victory, all because God thundered from heaven. They didn't have to prepare chariots. They didn't have to prepare captains. They didn't have to have commanders. They didn't have to have officers. They had a God in heaven that was willing to fight their battles for them. And so when they say, we've got a king, or we want a king that'll go out before us to fight our battles. One chapter before, God gave them a great victory, and an Ebenezer stone was raised. It was said, hitherto hath the Lord helped us. But now a short time has passed, just a few years. And what have they done? They've forgotten it. Well, surely they could have remembered this. This was in their lifetime. But what about whenever they were children and they would hear the stories of the previous judges? You had judges like Ehud. You had judges like Samson. There was even a prophetess named Deborah that was a judge. And I think that it's pretty interesting when you read about Deborah. Where did she sit? She sat under a palm tree to do the judging. And they would come to her and she would offer her judgment about certain things. Well, there was a captain named Sisera. And old Sisera, he had Israel under his thumb. His king said, you keep them oppressed. He had 900 chariots of iron. Now you remember, this is the Iron Age now. And these people have come to Samuel and he said, hey, your time's past, old man. I mean, don't you know that times are changing? I mean, we've gone from the Stone Age to the Iron Age. So he's got these 900 chariots. Well, he's kept them mashed down for so long. It's been about 20 years during Deborah's time. And the word comes to her and says, Barak, not Obama. Barak, I want you to get 10,000 men and we're going to go out and we're going to fight. And they're going, we ain't got 900 chariots. It's okay. If you'll do what the Lord tells us, it'll be good. He said, I'm not going unless you go with me. And she said, you're not going to get the honor of the victory. He's going to be so humiliated because he's going to be defeated by the hand of a woman. And the story goes like this. Old Sisera, he begins to hear that Israel is on the march, and he's thinking, we'll go out just like we've done it before. He takes those 900 chariots, and he goes down to the base of Mount Tabor, which is near the Carmel Mountains. And they're over near a wadi, which is basically a little riverbed that's dry. And the 900 chariots, they are just ready to pounce when that army shows its face. And all of a sudden, they begin to fire those arrows at the Israelites. But then something begins to happen. They begin to get hit in the face. And what is it? It's rain. And God begins to thunder this rain down. And that wadi, which was dry, even in the dry season, it's not very wide. But all of a sudden, all of those 900 chariots, they are mired in mud. Well, what do? They get out. They're trying to slodge through the mud. These are charioteers. Old Barak, he's got his guys, and what are they doing? They're beginning to slay them right and left. And old Sisera, what does he do? He escapes. and he's trying his best to get away, but he's caked in mud. And finally he gets to one particular little village, and there's a lady there, and she's looking, and her name is Jael. And she says, "Come on in my tent." And the reason that he goes in is because he thinks, hey, there's an alliance between my king and these people. Come on in. And the Bible gives us her name. It gives us her husband's name. And what does he do? He says, "I'm so tired. I'm so thirsty. Give me something to drink." "I've got something for you." And she takes a bottle, which is a goat skin, and gives him some milk. And he thinks, boy, that's refreshing. He lays down, she covers him up, and the next thing you know, he's so tired, he is fast asleep. And when she knows he's fast asleep, she slips out of the tent, she goes around, she pulls up a tent peg. She goes back in, she eases the cover down, she puts that tent peg on his temple and nails him to the ground. He was defeated by a woman. Barak comes in, and she says, "Your enemy's right over here." And God uses rain and mud and a woman named Jael to bring victory for the nation of Israel. These people had heard that story. They knew this story. They knew about those exploits. But yet, then again, haven't we been guilty of the same thing? Haven't we been guilty of not having much of a memory? God answers prayer after prayer after prayer, and then all of a sudden some trial steps into our life, and what do? We just begin to fret. What are we going to do? I guess we better look for the world for an answer. And we do the same thing. So the first thing, how easy it is for us to misplace our trust. Number two, how ashamed we are to be different. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 2 says this. It says, "Be ye holy, for I am holy." Do you know that you and I are supposed to be a holy people because we name the name of the Lord? And he begins to ask the nation of Israel something. Has there ever been a God with anybody that was like me? Hold your place in Samuel, and I want you to flip back to Deuteronomy 4. Deuteronomy chapter 4. And I want us to just see this with our own eyes. Let's begin in verse 32. For ask now of the days that are past, which were before thee, since the day that God created man upon the earth. In other words, think back all the way back to creation. Ask anybody that you want to ask from one side of heaven to the other whether there hath been any such thing as this great thing is or hath been heard like it. In other words, have you ever heard of such? You know, isn't that a phrase that's in the South? Have you ever heard such a thing? I've heard that as a kid growing up. I've heard grandmothers say that and old aunts say that. You ever heard such a thing? Well, verse 33. Did ever people hear the voice of God speaking out of the midst of the fire as thou hast heard and live? In other words, you ask anybody from one side of heaven to the other, name one God that ever spoke out of a fire and those people lived to tell about it. But yet that's exactly what happened to the Israelites. He spoke to Moses out of the fire. He spoke to them out of that pillar of fire and a pillar of cloud. God spoke to them in an audible voice. Did you understand that it says when he spoke a word that they could understand in their own language? I mean, he was using verbs and adjectives, speaking to them, telling them what they're supposed to do. Look at verse 34. Or hath God assayed, or means undertaken, to go and take him a nation from the midst of another nation by temptations, by signs, by wonders, and by war, and by a mighty hand, by a stretched out arm, by great terrors, according to all that the Lord your God did for you in Egypt before your eyes? Now you think about this. You've got the nation of Israel, and they have been slaves for 300 years in Egypt. They don't have any weapons. They don't have anything to fight with. The Egyptians are the most powerful army in the world at that time. All they are a bunch of nobodies that are slaves building pyramids and sphinx and those types of things. They don't have a chance. If they rebelled, they would be squashed. But then God steps in. And when God steps in, he has a man named Moses, and he goes and he says, "Let my people go." And Pharaoh says, "Who is your God?" Well, 10 plagues later, he knows. And 10 plagues later, those Egyptians are saying, "Here, take some money. Get out of here." They were giving them all kind of stuff to take with them. Why? They didn't want any more of their God. Those Jews and Israelites, they didn't fight a single battle. All they did was just watch God. God sent the frogs, and God sent the lice, and God sent the hail, and God sent the locusts, and then God sent the death angel. And there was 10 of them. And God fought their battle for them. Verse 35. Unto thee it was showed that thou mightest know that the Lord, he is God, there is none else beside him. That's true. Out of heaven he hath made thee to hear his voice, that he might instruct thee. And upon the earth he showed thee his great fire, and thou heardest his words out of the midst of the fire. And because he loved thy fathers, therefore he chose their seed. In other words, he chose you after them. And he brought thee out of his sight. That means that he brought you with his presence, with his mighty power out of Egypt. And then you get out of Egypt, and what is he doing? He's taking them into the promised land to drive out nations from before thee, greater and mightier than thou art, to bring thee in, to give thee their land for an inheritance as it is this day. Know therefore this day, and consider it in thine heart, that the Lord, he is God in heaven above, and upon the earth beneath there is none else. Thou shalt keep therefore his statutes and his commandments, which I command thee this day, that it may go well with thee and thy children after thee, that thou mayest prolong thy days upon the earth, which the Lord thy God giveth thee forever. God made them unique. He made them special. Now, if we're not careful, we want to be basically like all other people culturally. Don't we have God's people saying, "Let's see how we can possibly be like the world"? We have people that bring in worldly methods for their Sunday services. And you'll hear things like this: let's bridge the gap with the culture. The only problem is the culture don't want to become like us. They want us to become like them. And we are told in Romans chapter 12 that we are to not be pressed into the mold of the world. We're supposed to be transformed by the renewing of our minds, not conformed to the world. Matter of fact, the Bible tells us in Peter, it tells us there's things like we're a chosen generation. We're a royal priesthood. We're a holy nation. We're a peculiar people. In other words, we're supposed to be different. Why? Because we're to show forth the praises of His marvelous light, that we've been called out of darkness. So the Lord expects us to be different. Let me give you a third point. How resistant we are to any word that doesn't agree with our opinion. Now you think about that a moment. If we don't like it, we're resistant to it. Look at verse 19 and 20. Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel. In other words, they've just got finished hearing the old prophet of God. The judge that had been faithful as faithful can be. And him saying, you know, the timing's not right, guys. Deuteronomy tells us that God said there's going to be a king one day, but the timing is not right now. Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel. They said, nay, but we will have a king over us. We will. You're not telling us what to do. Why? That we may be also like all the nations. In other words, they were resistant for what Samuel was telling them. We want it. We'll have it. It doesn't matter what God or you say. And that's their attitude. You know, knowledge can be a great thing. Information can be a great thing. But do you know, just because a person has knowledge and just because a person has information does not mean they choose right? I'll give you an example. Choose any moral problem we've got in this country. Choose any social problem that we've got in this country. What's the first thing they do? Well, they find an expert. What's the next thing they do? They ask his opinion or her opinion. And what's always the answer? More money or more education or both. Is that not so? You take, let's use education. We've got folks that go to college now. They get educated. And when they come out, they're as ignorant can be when it comes to common sense type things. I was talking with someone the other day. I don't believe that if we had to fight another world war, I don't know that our country has the character to do that again. We've got people that they're just educated, 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 but they're educated without discernment. They're educated without wisdom. I'll give you an example. What is one of the big things that's happening now in the state of Georgia? We've got this drug that's been going around, and several people, I think maybe close to 10 people now, have probably died from it. We could take any teenager in any high school, and we could say, have you heard about these folks dying from this drug? Yeah, been hearing about that. But you know what some of those same young people that have that information will do? They'll take the exact same drug. And so education is not the answer by itself. Education does not have the ability to transform. You can know truth, but the question is, do you love truth? Because if you love truth, then you'll obey the truth. And so when we think about this third point, we may know a lot of things, but if we're resistant to the truth of God because it goes against our grain, that is not a wise place for us to be. Proverbs 12:15 says, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise." God sometimes may give us what we ask to our own peril. One of the things that we ought to always think and pray about is this: "Dear God, don't give me anything that's going to be hurtful to me. Even if I ask for it, don't give it to me if it's not good for me. And help me to have enough discernment, help me to have enough contentment to accept that answer." Let me ask you three things to think about. Number one, I want you to think about how blessed we are to have a king and an intercessor all in the same person. The nation of Israel, they had somebody to intercede for them. You know, one of the things that we're going to see as we get into chapter 9 and following, when Saul becomes king, you'll not find one time that I've been able to find in the reading that I'm doing ahead, you'll not find one time that the nation of Israel ever asked Saul to pray for them. But in our first few chapters of Samuel, you find the people of Israel on several occasions saying, "Samuel, pray for us. Make intercession for us." But you won't find that with Saul. When we think about our intercessor and our king, we have Jesus. And so we're blessed with that. And so I want you to maybe discuss that among yourselves. Think about how awesome that is, that we have the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. But when we sin, we've got an advocate with the Father, according to 1 John. And he stands there, and when the devil accuses us and says, "Hey, what about Tommy? What about that guy's sins?" Jesus steps forward and says, "His is under the blood. He's my advocate." And so we've got that intercessor. Do you expect God to answer your prayers in the same way every time? In other words, do all you want is yes, 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 yes? Why would that be wrong? Discuss that. It would be wrong because you pray for God's will for your life. And then let me ask you this. Can you think of a time when God said no to your prayers and then you later discovered how great that was a good answer? I can think in times in my own life when I got ticked off at God because God did not give me what I wanted. And I'd get to Poochie Lip. And I would say, "Dear God, I can't believe that you're not going to answer that prayer like I want it answered." And then all of a sudden time passes. And I look back and think, "Thank God I didn't have that happen." And I guarantee you, you can think of some times in your own life when that took place. Well, this chapter is a mirror for us. So, are we going to look in that mirror honestly? Or are we going to look in that mirror and walk away and not remember what we've just seen? If we'll be honest, I got a feeling that you'll say, "I'm kind of like the nation of Israel from time to time. Sometimes I'm resistant to anything that's, you know, not compatible with my opinion. You know, sometimes whenever, you know, the Lord will say, 'Don't do this,' and I'm thinking, 'Well, I want to, and I just don't like it.' Sometimes it's easy to misplace our trust, and then sometimes we're ashamed whenever God calls us to be different. 1 John chapter 2 tells us, 'Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. So tonight, what did they do? Well, they got what they wanted. They got what they wanted. Let me tell you something. They lost what they had. When this king comes along, they're going to lose those boys. They're going to lose their girls. They're going to lose their fields. They're going to lose their cattle. They're going to lose their sheep. They're going to lose their vineyards. And he's going to take, and he's going to take, and he's going to take, and he's going to take. And God is going to not listen to them when they say, "We made a mistake." Well, you made your bed, lie in it. And God's going to let them wallow in that bed for a while. And we'll see that in the weeks to come. Let's stand together.